It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medications to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today and spending the next half an hour with me. My guests are Maria Staples, who is the program manager for the Foster Grandparent Program, which is a program through PENQUIS, and Marianne Saxel, who's the project coordinator for the program. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. I love this program. I always have. My mother's been a foster grandparent for, Maria, how long has it been? 10 years?
It's been
better?
Probably more than 10 years.
Probably more than 10. She's 90 now, and she loves it so much. And the kids love her. They sent her Valentine's. It was just very sweet. Tell me about how long this program has been around and what it really does for people who don't know.
Well, the program's been around now for over 52 years, and it was started during the Johnson administration, and it initially was started with volunteers going into institutions where children lived, children with special or exceptional needs. But it didn't take long for them to realize that the strength of the seniors would be able to help these children integrate into public school, and it then followed them into the public schools. And it's really a program for both the senior and for children. And our seniors act as tutors or mentors for children with special or exceptional needs. But we feel that every child has a special or exceptional need. It could be a literacy need. It could be a social-emotional need. It could be that child when they're out on the playground that the other kids maybe don't play with, and the foster grandparent can help integrate that child. So we just feel like every school and every child could use a foster grandparent.
So a child doesn't have to be diagnosed with a special need.
No, absolutely not. Any,
so a lot of schools have foster grandparents.
Yes. So we are in about 60 sites across the state. So for this particular, for our program, PENQUIS covers 14 of the 16 counties. We cover every county except for York and Cumberland. But then I have a small piece of territory down in Brunswick. So Marianne and I could
be all over.
Marianne and I could be in Madawaska one day, and I could be down in, Topsom of Brunswick the next day. So
what are some of the things that the grandparents do when they go in? They're not teachers.
Right.
And you don't have to be a retired teacher to be a foster grandparent.
No.
Right?
I mean, we have volunteers from all walks of life, and they're really there to give that loving, caring, extra support. They will be assigned to children that have, like we talked about, the special or exceptional need that could be literacy, but they will interact with the whole classroom. So if Marianne and I, when we do our site visit and we walk in, we don't know which child is the one that's on the site assignment plan. They'll really be interacting with all of the children. And Marianne can give you some examples of some of the things that our volunteers do with the children.
Why don't you do that, Marianne?
I can do that. So our foster grandparents normally engage in activities like talking and listening, reading, singing, playing games, participating in crafts, holding a child. They go for supervised walks, arranging for social interactions with other children, especially if that's one of the areas they need to work on. They encourage appropriate behavior, acting as a positive role model, and assist with maybe washing hands or opening up the milk or things like that, helping to put on your coat or your boots or putting up mittens and zipping up. Those are all things that young people need extra sets of hands for, and that's what our foster grammies and grandpas do.
Do you find that as classrooms are really full and teachers are stretched even thinner than they have been in the past, that this really helps the teachers as well?
Absolutely. And we oftentimes get calls from schools that desperately want one. And so we're really happy to be here today to reach your audience and hopefully garner some interest in this program, because Marianne and I would love to be able to say we have a waiting list and we'll get you that volunteer, but it doesn't work that way. And so we really are reaching out in order to recruit volunteers. And they do need to be 55 or older. There is an income guideline for this program, but and we can talk that through if a volunteer calls, but we feel that it's quite a high income guideline, and we don't count assets, and we can discuss that with a potential volunteer. For example, a single person can probably have an annual income of around $25,000 and still be in this program to receive the stipend and mileage. If they're way over that, we would help them find another program that would fulfill the need that they want to fulfill in their community. So,
But the money that they get, because it's a volunteer program, but they do get a stipend.
They get a stipend and they get mileage. And what's really important to know about the stipend is that it cannot count against any of their benefits. Sometimes seniors may be reluctant to receive that, thinking it's going to affect my Social Security or my rent. It will not. It is a tax-free stipend protected by the government that it cannot count against anything.
And LIHEAP and
anything like
food stamps and all that.
Yeah. And it's not a very large amount. Nobody's doing it for the money.
Right.
But for some volunteers, it can be $200 to $300 more a month, non-taxable. And in this day and age, who can't use that? And I know when we've talked before, you know, it used to be their fun money that they would use to take their grandkids out or to go play bingo. But now Marianne and I are finding that they need it to get through the month. I mean, we survey our volunteers every year and how important this stipend is to help with copays on medication to you know, get through the month for food and bills and things like that.
And we get that car fixed too.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, because it costs a lot of money to keep a car going, and it allows them to keep their car moving forward and getting gas into the gas tank, and so that they can do other things that are important to them as well.
What do you find that the foster grandparents say about working with the children?
Oh, that they get so much more than they're giving. And so I do have some examples that
sure.
I could read to share with you.
For someone listening who might be thinking,
yes.
I think I might want to do this, but I'm not sure.
This is from one of our volunteers in the Lewiston area. He said, "I'm presently residing in an elderly and disabled housing where children are rarely present. The laughter of the young playing and running is never seen. Volunteering in grade schools teaches me about the young of today, who it so happens are totally different in behavior than when I was a child. They're savvy and quick to learn and sometimes are relieved to have an older person on whom they can depend when help is needed. As I age, I'm in hopes that I may be of service to children who may need me and my help in the coming years. Rest assured that I need them as much as they might need me. It keeps me hopping, healthy, and wise in my service to the children and teachers. And please don't forget all those great and dedicated teachers."
That is so sweet.
And we don't have a lot of men in the program, and we would love to be able to recruit men and women, but the children really love it when there's a foster grandpa, because so many kids don't have grandparents perhaps close by or in their lives, and this really seems to appeal to both the teachers and the kids.
And it's really role modeling for the young people. So it's allowing the young folks to meet older adults who can show them behaviors, help them with their reading, help them with their math, and even just play a game of chess with them on occasion. So it's building those kinds of relationships which will affect people forever.
The one-on-one must be really important for the children because they may not get that at home. Parents are busy. They're probably both working. There are other siblings. And to really have that special attention has got to make a difference.
Yes. I mean, to have somebody dedicating a minimum of 15 hours a week, and it can be up as much to 40. We don't see a lot of volunteers that do that many hours, but that is something we can do. To have someone just giving you that loving, caring presence is just what can set a child on the path to a successful future. And we're able to show that we can do that through our impact assessments, and we're able to show the difference that we're making with the children.
I know my mother gets very excited because the children will crowd around her and they get very excited and they want to sit with her at lunch. And if she has on a new piece of jewelry, the little girls notice. They don't miss a trick. It's very funny.
They're very observant.
They are very observant. And sometimes I'll paint her nails in fun colors and the little girls just think that that's terrific.
And they know when she's not there. So although they are volunteers, we do ask them to adhere to a schedule. That being said, life happens and we can deviate from that when need be. But those kids know when Grammy is supposed to be there, and when they miss a day, they definitely feel that.
And they're really part of the community as a whole. I mean, from the lunchroom all the way to the physical education, all the way to the library and reading and writing. I mean, they are part of that school community.
And I've seen through my own experience that the teachers have so much respect for the foster grandparents. That's really nice to see. It's a true collaboration for them.
Yes, and they are, you know, they want more, and that's what we're hoping to do is be able to find some more volunteers.
And I have to say, we have more sites than we have sites that would like to have volunteers, and we have been looking for volunteers. And so we have openings right now. I mean, if you fill out an application, we can move the process along and get you cleared, because we do a lot of background checks as well. We are we want to make sure people are safe to go into the schools. But really, the first step is to call us. We'll send you an application, fill out that application, send it back to us, and we will move forward with the process because we have schools right now who are asking us for foster grandparents. And we do not, you know, we have places to place you.
Are there any criteria that the person who wants to volunteer, anything that they, any background, specialties they should have?
Really, our volunteers come from all walks of life. So they just have to have a desire to want to make a difference, to a desire to be with children, because this is a program that serves children from birth to age 21. They have to be age eligible, so 55 or older, meet the income guidelines. And then, as Marianne said, we will do all the background checks at no cost to them. And be able to place them in a site once all the backgrounds come back. So,
what's it like for their first day? Do they ever tell you, I was so nervous and it turned out great? How does that feel to them?
Mostly they're worried about what will happen that first day and how busy will I be and will I remember all the kids' names? And we let them know that you probably won't remember all the kids' names, but that you'll follow the direction of the teacher. And it won't be long before you're right into the rhythm of that classroom.
When we come back, we will talk more with Marianne. And Maria, the number to call locally is 973-3611, 973-3611, or 1-800-215-4942, 800-215-4942. You can also go to penquist.org. Stay with us. We will be right back. Hi, we're back with Maria Staples and Marianne Saxel from the Foster Grandparent Program. Again, the numbers are 973-3611, 1-800-215-4942. This is such a great program. So the first day someone walks in, they're nervous. We were touching on that before the break of what it's going to be like. And you're nervous the first time you do anything, but I can't imagine the first time walking into a room full of children.
And prior to that first day, Marianne and I would be with the volunteer, meeting with the school principal, having an opportunity to meet with the teacher. So they get that little, pre-service type of training before they go for that first day.
But they get an idea of what it's like.
Yes.
You don't just set them free in the classroom.
Right. And so what's important to know is that they'll never be they're never left alone with the child, and they're not responsible for teaching. They're there to give that extra support, love, and care. And Marianne can let you know some of the things that they don't have to worry about that won't be happening.
Because there are some things that they do and some things that they're not allowed to do, which may be comforting to someone who's thinking about this.
Well, right. Well, it's really, you get to do all the fun stuff. So you get to do the art projects. You get to do reading in groups, and you get to help with math, and you get to go out to recess and go to lunch. But what you're not doing is you're never left alone with the class. You do not have to do any classroom management. So you're never left alone with young people. You are not a babysitter. You're not going to be doing anything that's harmful to you. So if you have concerns about a child being lifted up or something like that, you're not going to have to lift up young people. Children sometimes do sit in your lap, but you ask permission and make sure that that's appropriate in the classroom itself. You're not going to be the person who is doing the custodial work. You're not going to be transporting young people. You are, because we don't have you transport children back and forth from sites. No political activities. I'm trying to think of what else, Maria? What are we missing here?
Yeah, they wouldn't engage in any religious or political activities. We think that's just a good rule in general when you're out in the public. They would never discipline or punish a child in any way. So again, they're there to be that loving, support that every child needs.
And an extra set of hands for the classroom itself. I mean, because then the teacher can be having one reading group over here, and then the foster Grammy or grandpa can be over with another group helping with a math project or a science project. So it really adds another adult in a space. So when you have 15 or 20 kids, it's a great for the kids, and it's great for the school and great for the teachers to have that extra person.
And they love it so very much that oftentimes they'll say, I have to go in tomorrow because the teacher's going to be out. Well, no, you don't. The class has to be able to function without you. And that being said, you are a volunteer and you're allowed to take a day off. And within this program, they will accrue vacation time just like Marianne and I do. And they get paid the stipend for the same holidays that Marianne and I do. And there's just a lot of wonderful benefits to the program for the senior. But we need
those stipends over school vacation, too. Mm-hmm. Don't forget that. Mm-hmm. So if the school is on a winter break, the foster grandparent does not lose that stipend for that week, because there are the school's on break. They did not choose to go on break. The school went on break. So if they normally volunteer 20 hours a week, they still get that 20-hour-a-week stipend.
That's wonderful. That's very generous. What about the winter? Because I know some people are very nervous, and my mother talks about weather days.
Yes.
And snow.
And snow days. So obviously, if a school is closed, they're not going to go because there's no students there. And we're going to cover them for that. We call that a weather day. But that being said, because of the territory that Marianne and I cover, you could have a volunteer that lives 20 miles from the site. School might be open and weather may be fine there, but 20 miles away, it may be an issue. So we do allow them to take weather days, and they'll get paid for that day also. Sometimes our volunteers even have to take them in the summertime if they're at a year-round site and it's been very humid or affects their breathing. So they are allowed to take weather days when they need to do that. We don't want anybody going out when it's not safe for them to be doing that.
Do you ever hear back from parents of the children who've been helped by the foster grandparent?
Occasionally. I mean, usually the foster grandparent doesn't have a lot of interaction with the parent. More likely what will happen is our volunteer will be in a grocery store and the student will see them and go running and calling Grammy Margie or something like that. And oftentimes the real grandmother may look and say, wait, who's Grammy Margie? And that gives her opportunity to talk a little bit about the program. But we're always very careful about confidentiality because we tell them they will run up to you in the grocery store, or perhaps a parent will reach out to you and say, how is my child doing in school? And they're not allowed to give any information like that. They always direct back to the teacher.
So there's no full-on responsibility other than just helping out that child under the teacher's instruction.
Yes, and what will happen is they will be assigned, as we mentioned in the beginning, children with special or exceptional needs, and we will do what's called a site assignment plan. So it may say this volunteer is going to be here three times a week, so many times a week working on literacy, and so we want to make sure it's kind of like the volunteer job description. And so they do have a responsibility that way because we have to measure it afterwards to be able to show the impact that we're making. And we are able to show that we have an impact. And Marianne can tell you a little bit about that.
When we come back from the break, we can talk about that. Because I know that there has to be a huge impact. If a child is having trouble reading and they've got someone assigned to them, their literacy has to go up. So the sustainability of this program is going to speak for itself. When we come back, we'll talk more about this. Again, the number to call if you are interested is 1-800-215-4942. If you want to hear this show again, log on to WVOMFM.com. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. So, Marianne, personality traits that you look for in a foster grandparent. I'm assuming loving children would be kind of top of the list.
That's correct. You need to enjoy being with kids in all their moods and all their stripes. We also want to make sure that you have a sincere interest in kids and a desire to help those who need help. The ability and desire to relate to kids, ability to accept different races, cultures, and religions. A willingness to accept supervision, because you will be hearing from Maria and myself, I mean, and your principal and your school teacher. We want dependability. So if you say you're going to be there, the kids are expecting you. We want you to come when you're expected. A cheerful disposition, a smile on your face is always really helpful. And a willingness to really ask if you have questions. So if you don't know something, ask the teacher, call Maria or myself up. We will be glad to talk with you and explain what you're missing or a different way of approaching something. We want you to enjoy the experience, but we want to make sure that we're doing great good for our community.
So the foster grandparents never really alone. There's so much support available.
Absolutely. And so because we're so spread out because of our geographical area, sometimes maybe they can feel that they're off on their own, but they know that we are just one phone call away. When they come into the program, they have to complete 20 hours of an orientation packet with information that they have to read and answer the questions. And then monthly, they come to in-service meetings. Now, sometimes our volunteers prefer not to do that because they want to be in the school with the children, but it is mandatory that they do 40 hours of training annually. So Marianne and I will do meetings, and we have to do it in five locations because we're spread out. So we do one in Brewer, one in Dover, one in Lewiston, one in Gardner, and one in East Machias. And when we do that, so that takes up a lot of our time, but it's very worthwhile for us and for the volunteer. because they don't want to listen to us talk all the time, we arrange for speakers to come in. And in April, we actually have people coming in to talk about conscious discipline. We've had people come in to do nutrition education. We've had AAA come in and do defensive driving. And so they're always getting that continuing education. And because they're of a different generation, you may have different philosophies on discipline. And luckily, they don't have to discipline children. And we're there to help them know how it functions in the role of this volunteer service.
Well, and that's a good point because mores have changed. Mm-hmm. And when you have someone who's older, it may have been very mm-hmm. different back in the day when they went to school. Mm-hmm. And so how do you approach that when you get that kind of, well, back in my day?
Right. Well, you certainly let them express that within the context of our in-service meetings because it's a place where they can get other ideas from volunteers on what worked for them to kind of redirect a child in a positive way. But you do just support them in that was how they were brought up. And today it's a different world and we do things differently. And the fact that the volunteer is there can make all the difference for that child because they just have so much knowledge and life experience. And even if things are being done differently, every parent loves their child and everybody wants the best for their kids. And it may just look differently in this day and age than it did 40 years ago.
And the application process is pretty easy. It's a phone call. You just make a phone call and you'll send it out to them.
Right. And it's done by paper. So our communication with our foster grandparents is done through the phone, through the mail. So our applications are paper. We send stipend reports by paper. We send information they need to renew. It's all done through the mail because we do not assume that people have access to a computer or are comfortable with a computer. So we want to make sure that our foster grandparents are taken care of and that it's the communication style is the best for them.
What about a senior who may have a disability or there may be? Is that if they're listening to this and thinking, well, I have a walker or I'm in a wheelchair, I can't do this.
Right.
My mother has a walker, so I know that that's fine. But can you address any fears someone may have about that?
Yes, we will do everything that we can to make it accessible to you. And all of the sites will do that as well. And in fact, what a great learning experience for children to see a senior if they do have a walker or something, still being able to be out, making a difference in the community, and to instill empathy and compassion in children. So do not let that deter anybody from applying.
My mother has these little like shoe booties on one side of her walker and they're like, look like sneakers
and
the kids
blue.
Went crazy. They're blue and the kids went crazy. They crowded all around her. Mm-hmm. Grammy, look what's on your walker. And she just loves it. It's wonderful. She gets way more than she gives back.
And we always tell the story of your mother when she had a walker and the wheel was squeaky and she was working with older children and they said, stop, Grammy Margie. And they took it and down to shop and they fixed it. And so, everybody it's just a wonderful feel-good program for
it really
everyone.
Is. And that comes to the point that they really care. The Grammy does become like family and they really care about them and want to take care of them.
Right. Yes. And it's all about community. I mean, it takes a village and we're all about community and it's about having community care, not only for our youth, but also for our seniors. And it's mutual.
And let's talk about the impact that this program has on the children and how they come from, because I'm sure you do surveys of how they come from. Maybe they were a CD student and now that they're really coming up in their reading or they're learning to do math.
Yes. So twice a year we do assessments with the supervisors and with the volunteers to show what progress we're making regarding the children that are on that site assignment plan. And Marianne can let you know that some of the results that we've been able to prove through our assessments.
So elementary school children demonstrate improvement in a number of areas, including the academic performance, self-esteem, and self-confidence. Preschool and daycare children demonstrate improvement in such areas as school readiness, cognitive skills, self-confidence, social skills, and classroom behavior. So we are getting these kids school ready, or if they're at their school, we're making sure that they're reaching those benchmarks.
We need it most. Maria Staples, Marianne Saxel, thank you so much for being here. If you want to hear the show again, log on to WVOMFM.com and listen to it in podcast form. Thanks for listening.
This has been Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor. To listen to this show again, log on to our podcast page at WVOMFM.com. That's WVOMFM.com.